Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast. We are talking with an NCAA leader today, the offensive coordinator at LIU Post, Coach Brian Hughes. Coach Hughes has been at LIU Post as the offensive coordinator for 22 years now and is no stranger to being at the top of several categories at the Division II level on offense. Coach has also been named a Division II Assistant Coach of the Year in 2005. He was named the Coach of the Year by the AFCA. We're excited to have him here on the podcast and learn a little bit about what he does to create a successful offense. Coach, it's great to have you here.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it, and I appreciate all the hard work you do in keeping this great game of football out there. Thank you.
Coach, well, let's get into it and talk a little bit about how you got into this profession. You know, looking back at it, you know, what was the trigger for you that made you say, hey, I want to be a coach?
You know, I didn't know immediately that that was the path I was going to take, and I was a little bit more into the potential business world and academics and things with my football career. And you know what? I had a tremendous impact from my high school coach. And when the things that I was set out, thought I was going to be studying in college and thought I would like, it turned out not liking. The logical progression for me was to get to the spot where the guy that I had looked up to the most, where he had found his peace and love. And, you know, football to me had changed my life and saved my life. And then being able to get into coaching of football, been able to keep me in the profession and to keep me around the great game. So I'd say that, you know, as usual, a lot of guys, incredible impact from my high school coach. He really put passion into the game. He taught us how to prepare. He embraced toughness and those kind of things. And, you know, he just recently, you know, retired from teaching and all. And his son reached out to me and said that he'd had some pictures that he wanted to forward and mentioned that, you know, I had been one of the tougher guys that he had coached. And that to me was the greatest compliment in life, because I think toughness is a choice and hard work is a choice. And I think he instilled that in me. So I would say that if I had to pin it down, the thing that got me wanting to get involved in coaching was my high school coach.
Coach, you know, it's for some of us, it's different. I grew up the son of a coach, and I can't remember when I didn't want to be a coach. But you step onto the field for the first time as a coach. It's so different from what you've been doing as a player, and there's kind of that moment of, you know, oh my God, what am I doing? And it's like trying to take a drink out of a fire hose sometime with all the things that you have to do and, you know, be on point with, et cetera. So what were some of those things you learned early on in that transition from player to coach that really have developed you and informed you throughout your career?
I think the big key, you hit an excellent point there, because I can vividly remember the first varsity practice. I at the time was on the defensive side of the ball and as a defensive coordinator, and the imposing amount of time that I felt was in front of me that I had to make sure was filled up with activity. And I think time management on the field was probably the most intimidating and imposing thing. But I had some great lessons, and I was fortunate enough to have a couple of older coaches on the staff that I was coordinator ahead of, but that were there as retired guys and were really gave me the lay of the land. So the most important thing I think I took from those early days was not only practice time and organization and that type of making sure that we maximize all our time, but to have the things that you do in practice translate onto the field. I think I had I had one of these gentlemen that really impacted me, and he would always tell me about drills, that drills are wonderful, but where do they show up on the tape? And you got to see, you know, because the kids got to understand that, you know, these drills aren't just here just to fill up time. They're not conditioning drills. These are things that we can get maximum effort out of, but to be able to show them that's the reason why we're going through this and see them be successful on the field executing it, I think that was a big thing for me. I'm the offensive line coach also, so, you know, repetition and drill time and those type of things, which were so imposing in the beginning, and now there's never enough time in a practice to get the things done you have. So, you know, as I start to ramble off and think about, you know, football in itself, I hope I don't miss answering a question. Keep me on task with all that stuff, because, you know, I can go in seven different directions here. But the point, I think I was intimidated a little bit by how I was going to fill up the time, and that didn't take long to square that away. And then I think another big part of my early coaching was not only the passion that I had for the game, but the way to motivate players to understand that passion and to build on that passion themselves. So I've had some great experience with that because it's speaking from the heart, you know, that passionate feeling about this game. I'm sure that it happens in other games. I'm sure that there's coaches out there that feel the same way us football guys do, but I can't believe that it's true.
Yeah.
I think we cornered the market on it all. So that, I guess that would be the things early in my career that were most imposing and then really kind of set the tone was, you know, practice, organization, seeing it print translate onto the field, and then the motivational aspect of the passion of this game.
Yeah, and you bring up a couple interesting points there that I think I'd like to elaborate on. You know, filling up the practice and the drills and the point that you got to be able to see it on film. I know there's a series I wrote for USA Football, and I just titled it When It Happens on Film, and it was, you know, kind of that drill to game film, so there's a direct application for it. I think a lot of young coaches today, you know, the internet is great. It provides all kinds of ideas and drills and all those kinds of things. You really have to approach what you're going to do in drills, at least I feel this, kind of from let's take what we want to see in the game, let's take the situations they're going to see, and then let's build drills specifically for that, rather than I saw this really cool drill that does this.
Right.
And that's a mistake I made early on. You know, I don't think internet was necessarily big when I first started coaching. So, I mean, I had all my, probably, I guess, date myself, but VHS tapes that I got from, like, Coach's Choice and books and stuff. And I go through those and, oh, this looks good and that looks good. But I learned later, I think, as I started to become a coordinator, that that's not the approach to it, that you have to look big picture and bring it down to the small picture of drills.
No question about that. I think one of the advantages that I had early in my career was a background in wrestling, because I think wrestling coaches do the best job of that across the board. They take you down to the last piece of a guy hanging on your ankle as you're going out the circle. You know, let's drill that seven times. Let's figure out what we're going to do, how we're going to kick our foot out. Let's, you know, the stand-ups and the switches. And so wrestling, I think, gave me a great insight into how to identify the things within the thing that need to be drilled so they become automatic. You know, and believe me, the way O-line play is gone, it's getting more and more into, you know, the hand fighting, hip snap, and pushing that you see on a wrestling mat than a lot of other things. So we constantly harp on that drill time, but that you're 100% on the money, and I think that was one of the advantages I had, was a background in wrestling.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, as an offensive line coach, you'll agree with it. That group, you guys, you know, I've coached it before. I've been a quarterback coach most of my career, but, you know, as a coordinator, you guys were always the one asking for more time for individual and drilling. You know, there's a point in that I think maybe we need that a little bit more in the game right now. We need to spend more time on the fundamentals. We get enthralled with our RPOs and our schemes and all those things like that. But ultimately, the teams who execute on game day are going to be really good at the details that are based in the fundamentals we spend our individual periods on.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more here, because the fight for time is incredible. And I'll give you, I always bust our special teams coordinator, Jim Gibbons, who does a tremendous job. But since they've gone to these spread punt deals, and they have some of my big guys playing them plugger spots in the backfield there, I lose 15 minutes every other day in punt drill. I lose with those guys. It drives me absolutely up the wall, because that's where I steal all my time, you know, during special teams and during any period of time that you know, the O-line guys aren't involved. So, yeah, that's definitely the truth, man. We're always fighting, and nobody wants to hear how many minutes I want. But I never get what I want, but I always shoot for the stars, you know?
Absolutely. The other thing you mentioned that I heard you say that's interesting, because I didn't see it in your bio. You know, your bio is all about you being an offensive line coach and a coordinator, which you've done for a long time. But you mentioned you were a defensive coordinator.
In the high school level, I was a defensive coordinator. And, you know, I had played offensive line. So, you know, being on the defensive side of the ball, that was a great help. And then when I first got into college, I was the offensive line coach at a part-time position. And I had a chance to work at the Merchant Marine Academy, which became a full-time position, but that was on the defensive side of the ball. So for a year, I coached D-line, and then for 2 years, I coached linebackers. And that, to me, was probably three of the most important years in the development of me as a coordinator that ever happened, because to be able to work on that side of the ball and understand what they were trying to accomplish, and then to see what the defensive reaction to certain offensive formational movements and boundaries and things, it was a tremendous resource for me. So I early in my career, I had an opportunity to spend three full years on defense, so in the college level as well. So that was a big help.
Yeah, I think it's something, you know, young guys in this game kind of need to have that experience. When you're at the high school level, depending on, you know, what kind of situation you're in, you might coach both sides of the ball in a single year. I know that certainly helped my development as a coach, because I could understand the game from both sides. But, you know, it's funny. I've had, you know, assistants at the college level who have only coached one position. Right. And honestly, like, have been so focused on becoming good at that that they don't have the big picture of the game. And I think it's to, you know, your detriment as a coach that you don't have some of those experiences. I think you need to push yourself maybe to find some new opportunities, to step out of maybe your area of expertise or what you, you know, were a player as.
Yeah.
And look for other opportunities to learn a game like that.
That's, again, having the chance to do that without having to consciously do it was really, really a blessing for me. So I couldn't agree with you more on that one, to tell you the truth.
Coach, you know, looking back at those early years for you, I think we learn a lot from our mistakes. What's a mistake you made as a young coach, and what did you learn from it?
I would say a couple of mistakes. First, let's say, I would say this. My first full-time job was at the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy, and I worked for a tremendous gentleman named Charlie Pavada. He instilled in us a feeling of compassion. He would tell us that the easiest part of these guys' day had better be coming to football practice, because it was, you know, it's a U.S. military academy, and they had tough responsibilities on that side. And so, in the beginning of my career, working for him, we made, you know, the game, the practices had to be better. They had to be more compassionate. It was a great feeling, and it was wonderful. Relationships were built that way. When I left there, I think I went probably a little too hard the other way, because now we got to motivate guys who come to practice that this is the toughest part of their day, not the easiest part. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to motivate a guy coming to the easiest part of his day, but you do got to motivate him the hardest part of his day. And I think there was an unyielding feeling or a reactionary deal that I was as a younger coach, much, much harsher, much more intimidating. And, you know, if I had to look back, I would say that was probably one of the regrets that I have, because I know, and I see a lot of the players that I had back in those days, and they, you know, we have great relationships too, but I'm sure the guys on the fringe didn't feel the same way. And I feel regret regarding that aspect of it. But, you know, since then, things have evolved, and I think a lot of it had to do with me having children myself, that you start to realize that these are somebody's sons here, that I wouldn't want anybody to speak to them in a certain way, and my child that way. And so, if I had to do that, that would be the only regret I had. I think maybe professionally, I don't have any regrets. I mean, we've had opportunities to take some things that maybe weren't a great fit for my family, but might have been good for my career, and we decided that wasn't the right way to go for me. So, very few regrets. But that one, I really kind of wish I could have got that one back a little bit, because I bet you there was a few guys out there that would have loved the game a little bit more had I been a little bit less harsh, you know?
Absolutely.
But that would be it. You know, that would be it.
Coach, with, at the college level, we have GAs or interns, coming in all the time to us fresh out of playing. What's that advice you usually offer to that young coach to help him move on in the profession?
I think that the you have two types of guys that come in that way. The guys that were excellent players that maybe have to be told, you got to be a little bit understanding, because not everybody's quite as gifted or blessed as you are. I think that there's also the other side of it where, not the other side of that, but there is another side where you have to have them establish a separation, that you're not here because you're close in age to be friends there. And not necessarily not to be cold and harsh, but by the same token, you got to be able to draw a line where there's going to be a respectful end. So I would take the more talented guy returning and wanting to be a coach to try to coach him up on being more understanding of someone who may be less talented. And I would take the guys who may be a little bit immature and want to be pals with people and grind them into the importance of having separation and that type of discipline. again, the feeling I'd want to always create with a GA or intern is a feeling that there's room for constant growth. And I'll tell you what, one of the things I'm not great at is organizing those guys into that growth. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing to reach out and you know, sit and come on in and just be around, man, I'll give you everything I got, but I'm not going to be the guy that's going to sit here and say that, you know, you need to be here this amount of time to learn. I mean, you obviously learn the minimums, but, you know, those guys that want to grow, I want those guys around. You know, I want them seeking it out. I want them sitting and looking for ways to increase the circle of influence that they have, you know, yeah, to increase their responsibility. I try to let guys, you know, at that age, you know, grow their own job. You know, I'm going to give you as much as you can handle. Mm-hmm. And some guys never grow out of handling, you know, just drawing cards, you know. But some guys really, really can expand into areas of help. So, you know, that would be the advice. You know, the advice, those two things I'd look for. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, constantly look to learn and improve. And not just in football, but in every aspect of leadership and every aspect of interpersonal communications and, you know that type of stuff. I really have a deep faith, and I would share that with them as well if they were warranted that or wanted that. But that's the way I would attack it. You know, identifying, you know, the individual differences, and then, you know, counsel them through as to how they can make a great impact in this game.
Absolutely, and I think you point out something important there, and that really to make it in this game, you have to be a self-starter in terms of taking on responsibility. You know, I think back mm-hmm. to, you know, my early days as a high school assistant and coaching on the freshman level, and I wanted to get up to the varsity level. You know, instead of hanging out in the teacher's lounge, you know, I found out the head coach was going out to the field house and watching film every day. I met him out mm-hmm. there. I watched film.
Yeah.
I helped him chart things. He didn't ask me to do it. I did it. You know, I'd come back with a report. Coach, here's what I found out about this opponent. I mean, you have to show that you're going to learn and take on those responsibilities. And professional development, you know, you certainly want, you know, some guidance. You want to sit down with guys who've been there before. But you got to take it into your own hands and, you know, be willing to spend the time, maybe even the money, to go out and develop yourself in this profession. It's not all going to be found free on YouTube. You're going to have to use some sort of resources.
Well, I think we both started back when there was none of that, so we had to reach out for it. Yep. But in that, let me ask you a question, because maybe you can even help me on this. When you have a guy that's not that self-starter, you know, how do you maintain your relationship with a guy like that? How do you have any experience with that, where you had a guy that was hired and kind of didn't really fill the type of voracious hunger for the game that you had? How did you handle that, if you don't mind me asking?
I think I had a lot of those interns, and I'm really pleased and excited for them that they've been able to go on and find full-time coaching jobs. We didn't have graduate assistants. These guys essentially were either student assistants or mm-hmm. interns, mm-hmm. meaning they were working for free or nothing.
Right.
But I always treated them like I did, you know, other members of the staff, full-time guys, et cetera, and kind of had an expectation for them. So it would start with that group was drawing cards, and I can remember, you know, mm-hmm. that was kind of all they were doing. And I'd let them get by with that for maybe a couple of weeks. But then it was like, hey, I need you to do this today, and would give them some small tasks and kind of light that fire a little bit and get them the idea that, you know, we're going to need more for you, and there's more for you to learn. Because sometimes, you know, I had a coach tell me this all the time, like, you know, you start out and you don't know what you don't know. You kind of got to let them know. The toughest guy, and maybe the guy who will have a hard time with, or the hardest time with it, will be the guy who thinks he knows, you know, something and he doesn't. Fortunate that, you know, the guys we brought in have been very humble and wanting to learn and mm-hmm. knowing they don't know everything. But they really grasp on to taking, you know, little bite-sized chunks and then would take on larger things that, you know, and they grew in the profession. And these guys, I see them out now at AFCA or wherever I might be. And, you know, these guys have grown into they're professionals at their job. They're good coaches. They're guys who were able to help bring someone else along in the profession now. So I think that's the key, coaches. I think you do have to, you know, push them a little bit to do things, and you'll find out. I mean, if that guy's blowing it off and leaving, well, he ain't going to be around long. It's probably not for him.
Yeah.
And he might have already decided, like, this isn't for me. So
yeah,
I think you see both sides of it.
Yeah, I get my problem is I get a little bit intolerant of a guy that doesn't want to improve, and I end up bashing relationships, but that's part of my faults.
Well, and it obviously is all about relationships, and I know like there's been guys on the field like, you know, whatever. I used to have, and I'll call him out right now. He's doing a great job. He coaches at Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's University of Indianapolis or Indianapolis
University. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
But he's a tight ends coach there, and he's been doing a good job. But I can remember his name, Danny Reinick. I just yelled his last name. He played for me, and he coached for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's say the scout cards weren't in the place they were supposed to be, and I'm looking for him, and just yelled, Reinick! And Danny would come running across the field with what he was supposed to. And, you know, I think he really got that sense of urgency. And I just remember his growth even in that one season.
Sure.
Yeah, we had him as a coach, and, you know, I'm so proud of him right now and what he's doing. But, yeah, I think that's what you want to see from those guys is, you know, being able – maybe I remember one of our former quarterbacks drew up a scout card with 12 players on it, and, you know, we laughed about it. We had fun with him, and I think we kept it up on the wall the whole season and put his name on it. But,
that's great.
You know, you do have to, you know, understand that sometimes it's treating them like players and helping them grow a little bit, but also bringing them to that point where you want them to be your equal. You want them to be a valuable member of the coaching staff and be more than somebody who's just drawing cards up in the room while you're doing something at a higher level. So,
well, it lets you expand the things that you can do as a coordinator. You know, if you don't have to spend your time watching these smaller details getting done properly, you know, that's a huge blessing. Yeah.
So. Absolutely. Well, Coach, let's delve a little bit into the culture behind what you guys do. And I'm sure, you know, the head coach drives the overall culture, but you have the opportunity to develop some things and what you're going to be in on offense and, you know, what your identity is going to be. What kinds of things are you doing and what, you know, what is the culture behind your offense?
Well, I tell you, we pretty much, you know, year to year, we're going to be a little different. You know, in Division II, like I said, you're not handpicking the athletes exactly and position-wise that you're going to get. And so you have to be very flexible in getting the playmakers the ball. So from year to year, I think that the offense shifts as far as its appearance is. But there are certain fundamental, basic building blocks that are never going to change for us. And the thing that we work on tremendously from an internal standpoint, each player is identifying what matters most to them. And when you have great leadership, what matters most invariably comes out to be the benefit of a big group. And you know, once you can get that type of mentality getting across the board, and it is a great pressure on the leadership of the internal program, but you know, when you identify what matters most, then you can pretty much justify everything that needs to go in to get into that spot of what matters most. And, you know, sometimes deep down, a kid, what matters most might be his own success. Mm-hmm. But you're hoping that there's enough of us that are together, and what matters most is the greater good here, being part of something bigger than themselves, being able to accomplish something that they can never do on their own. You know, those type of mantras that we continuously pound on, I think it's a daily situation. I don't think it's a culture that's built when you start in August. I think it's a culture that pervades throughout the entire year, and I think it's a culture that has to be emulated by the staff. And particularly every person, you know, offensively, I know my tremendous staff that, you know, we're going to set the basic fundamentals. And so what is it? It's going to be hard work. It's going to be toughness. It's going to be unselfishness. It's going to be commitment. I mean, these words that everybody passes around have to be presented, identified, defined, and then given them a clear vision of this is the foundational beginnings. Now, just like we talked about before, when you're looking at a drill in practice and you're looking for it to be executed on the field, the same thing, these basic fundamental building blocks have opportunities to be shown on a daily basis. And while we don't get to film them and play them back all the time, there are times when you actually can, and there are situations when there's witnesses to it. And so, you know, we're constantly conscious of doing all those things the right way. Mm-hmm. Now, within that's going to be, you know, the fundamental breakdowns that happen from individuals that come together and certainly can't keep the same level of discipline that we'd hope all of them would have. But I believe that, for the most part, we be able to become great educators because of the fact that we have, I know myself, I have particularly, and on my staff, we're very much close on this, to use our position as football coaches to help young men really understand what matters most, and that's to become a man of character and integrity mm-hmm. that'll impact the world in a caring and loving way. Now, we rep that saying over and over, and we want them to end up being the best sons and husbands and fathers, and I always mention in that order, please, that they can possibly be. Now, that's not anything that we've made up. This has come over time. I was impacted tremendously by a guy that I saw speak at the AFC convention. His name's Joe Ehrman, and he is this Inside Out Coaching is his book, and
right.
he spoke there, one of the things that absolutely changed me was reading that book and having the impact that we have. So when we set out that what matters most to us as a staff is that they become great men, and they outline that what matters most to them is that this group is going to achieve something better than it could ever do on its own, then we have the foundational culture that we need in order to make the whole thing work. Now, what builds out of that is a unrelenting desire to get to perfection, the push for 100% effort constantly, the praise of the lesser guy in the group that's working his ass off, praise of the scout team, the constant repetitious praise of hard work and all those foundational things we talk about all year long. And then what builds is practice. We are a tough physical team. We play very, very fast. We look extremely multiple, but I think our system has a great level of simplicity to it. We're going to come out, and we have certain things that we identify as who we are. And it's all those factors that I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But I think on the field, it's relentless hustle and toughness and being in great condition. And those are the things that I think we've built. You know, there's years where we ran almost two games worth of plays more than anybody else in our conference. Now, this year we had a little bit more of a quarterback that liked to check things out a little bit, so we didn't run quite as many plays, but, you know, we would get out, we're 100-play a game, that's our goal, you know? And so to do that, you know, the practice intensity level's got to be tremendous.
Right.
And we do keep that. And, you know, again, everything comes back down to what we identified is what matters most to us. And we're not going to get out tough, man. That's just one thing. If you can't play, this is a very, very difficult game to play. It's a very tough game. It's the hardest game out there. And if you're not a tough guy, you cannot play here. That's just a flat out from Coach Collins down on the defensive side to the offensive side. It's a toughness situation. And you're going to be tough or you're not going to play. And that, if you wanted to say one thing, I want teams walking off the field going, man, I can't believe what I just went through against this team, with this LA Post team. And we're going to be physical. We're going to be tough. We're going to be efficient. We're going to be smart. We're going to be in great shape. You know, as you can see, I mean, I probably said the same thing 7 times already, because this is how we talk every day to each other. This is how we talk to the team every day. This is the yearly thing. But if there's one thing I want to be remembered for is that nobody outworked us, nobody outhustled us, nobody outtoughed us.
Well, what really strikes me about what you guys are doing is you guys are coaching 24/7. Every opportunity that mm-hmm. is or anything that's happening really is a chance to coach for you. I mean, you know, kind of brought up, you didn't say it, but brought up the idea of teachable moments and being able mm-hmm. to, you know, play back some of those things for them. It's so important that you have that mm-hmm. so you can take it out onto the field. And so let's shift the focus a little bit to that. And in looking at, you know, your classroom opportunities, film room opportunities, walkthrough opportunities before you actually hit the practice field, what do you feel are some of the best things you guys are doing to prepare your team?
Well, I think it's a multitude of learning styles that are involved in every intricate large group, and people are going to learn differently. So there are guys that sit in that film room, and we do always work to coach from the positive side of things. Like you just hit on was teachable moments. You know, if there's an effort issue, I usually address that a little bit on a more personal basis with a guy rather than, you know, bringing embarrassment out in front of a group. I think that there's certain guys, let me get back to my thing about learning differences. Some people will learn better sitting watching the film, and some people learn better walking it through, and some people learn better drawing it, and some people learn better reading it. Some people learn better listening to it. So we give them opportunities for every single type of learning style. within our game plans and our playbook is areas where things have to be recorded by the player. So there's the guy that's drawing and he's learning it better, and the other guy that hates drawing is learning, just maybe going through the motions, but audio, he's listening, he's a better listener. The guys that watch the film, you know, they might be learned better that way. Everybody learns better by actually doing it. So, you know, the walkthrough situation, the times when they can actually execute things even at a slower pace, those are valuable teaching moments. When we do find, again, in the film room, I do have a lot of interaction with them speaking and answering questions because of what their train of thought might be. Everything I do believe is presented in such a way that it's kind of a safe environment. There's not going to be a fear. Now there's some guys, I've had some veteran dudes that need to know stuff that they don't know. That disappoints me greatly, and I will certainly let them know that in a various different ways. But it'll never be in an embarrassing way, and it'll never be in a secret, a super confrontational way. Sometimes I will confront them in front of their peers and saying, you know, you owe this to them, and you're not giving it. And so it's very truthful, and I think. Again, I keep skipping back to some of the things I've hanging in my office, but there's a big sign above my desk that says, if I tell you the truth, can we still be friends? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, I point to that when it's coming. And for young men to understand that it's nothing personal, I think that's a big, important thing for them to learn. But getting back to learning and teaching, it's done with the wide range in theory. So we're going to have a bunch of different opportunities. We do have walkthrough periods every practice. We're always going to be a day. I try to be a day, a film day, caught up all the time. Sometimes it takes a little bit extra work and guys that for me to, because of our meeting schedules, that I may have to send it out to them online rather than be able to identify every single play and all that. But they're expected to watch on their own. And, you know, once they hold up that end, along with the different versions of how we teach, I think it's been very workable for us. It's teaching, you know, is really the key. I think that, you know, I was a high school earth science teacher for 11 years, and that has been a tremendous, tremendous impact on how I present and how to keep things interesting and to recognize in a room when you're losing people mentally. I think sometimes, we grind and grind and grind, and you know, it's easy for us because we're so passionate, but sometimes those guys behind you or sitting next to you, you know, their eyes are rolling. So you got to recognize how much time you're spending. You know, all those kind of things go into it, but I think it's because we use a multitude of different type of styles.
Coach, you know, in your 22 years, I'm sure you've seen your offense evolve, and you mentioned that, you know, you're trying to get 100 plays a game in there. Mm-hmm. You know, what's been the evolution of your offense over, the course of your tenure there at LIU Post?
That's a tremendous question. I love that answering this one because it shows a great range here, I'll tell you. We came in, and when Brian Collins took over back in the late 90s, they had been a run-and-shoot offense here, all spread, back in the old run-and-shoot days. The first thing we did, and we had a bunch of talented guys, but they had not really been better than 500 for a while. And so we come in, the first thing that we did was sit down and evaluate the entire group of people that were here, and then we started moving guys. We got ourselves a couple of tight ends off the defensive line. We got a fullback from played linebacker. We got a couple of running backs off the defensive backfield side, and because the positions that had not been recruited here for a long time. So, and we really went and we hunkered down and we played great defense and we pounded the hell out of the ball. And we had 1,000-yard rushers each year. We had years where we had 2 1,000-yard rushers. And then Ian Smart's freshman year was a great player for us. He was a 900 guy and we had 1,100 guy. And then his sophomore year, he had 1,000, and the other guy had 1,400, and then his junior year he had 2,400, and senior at 2,200 himself. So we were running the ball, and we were pounding into people and going play action and playing tremendous defense. I can remember one year where we, in spring practice, we didn't score one touchdown on our defense. Inside run was like just hitting a brick wall. But in the course of that next season, our defense gave up 232 yards rushing the entire season. So I knew we had a great team, and we ran the hell out of the ball. So back then it was running the ball. When Ian Smart left us, and we had some good running backs, but not great ones, we stayed a little bit more with that offense. And then, I'm sorry, I'm stepping back a second. We played Grand Valley State in the playoffs when Ian Smart was a senior, and we saw the Brian Kelly offense out there. And we were it was the first year we had made the NCAA playoffs, the first time a non-scholarship team had ever been in, and we went out there and played Grand Valley, and we were exposed to that offense. And the next year, that's we studied them, we studied that film, we went out, and then we moved into that concept of shotgun and getting the ball out and around, and we had some receivers that were great next few years, and then it continuously evolved. We got into the triple option. I had a chance to meet Urban Meyer when he was moving from Utah to Florida. I was speaking at a Nike clinic down in Orlando and got a chance to sit with him for a couple of hours. And next thing you know, what we had started as the spread from Grand Valley now was, you know, becoming triple option that they were running out of Florida and Utah and back in those days. And so we went through that phase. Then we had quarterbacks that were, after that episode, we went to the Elite Eight in 2005. With a great offense, Robbie Blount, our quarterback. And when he graduated, we had another guy come in with similar for a couple of years. We had a great, and then we got into a couple of guys with a little better passers. And the next thing you know, your number two quarterback's not so good, so you're not going to run the quarterback so much. And so we've evolved now into a power run team that's spread, throwing the ball. And obviously, we had great success. We were, I mean, conference-wise, we were ridiculous as far as statistics are concerned. But I think we were 1 in total offense. We were 1 in pass offense. We were 2 in rush offense. We were 2 in points. We were average rush 1, first downs earned 1. I mean, the list is on and on. And then falling, you know, to the third down efficiency where we were number 1 in the nation. So I think that's the evolution of it. Right now, if you wanted to say, you know, if you're going to play against post, what do you got to be ready for? I would say that you got to be ready for a bunch of different possibilities because, you know, if you take something away, you're leaving something else. So we know how to attack the ball. I think one of the best things we've evolved into recently is running the power scheme, down scheme plays with about 6 or 7 different variations on them, reading different people, not reading people, running it with the cue, running it without, with the running back, running it off motion, running counters off the power. I mean, everything that's built off of that play. And it all comes off of how you're defending it. You know, right. If you start to defend it by rolling that eighth guy into the box, then there's no way in the world you're going to be able to play the power shovel pass. I mean, so the way we combine things, I think, is where the evolution has come. Being able to have a quarterback that is adjustable has been valuable, and we've been blessed with great quarterbacks. And I think, you know, what I've really done a bad job of Keith is talking about it, all this wonderful stuff that we were able to do as coaches. You know, we got some pretty damn good players here. And that's really what, you know, I got to humbly always remember that, you know, you go third down, you number 1 in the nation in third downs, and I look at it and go, well, our quarterback efficiency rating, he was 4 in the country, and our you know, we have an offensive lineman that's All-American first team AFCA, and 3 other guys were All-Conference first team, and then you have a running back that averaged 7 yards a carry. I mean, boy, all of a sudden, you don't really take too much to be a great third down play team because you got guys that can attack, you know, and so, you know, I've been blessed with that, and this whole thing, you know, like I said, the evolution, it's become great camaraderie in our staff. We've been able to stick together for a good period of time, and being able to evolve into what we have in place has been a key to our success.
And it's, you know, it's a bit of a science in putting together an offense. And something you mentioned there is, you know, talking about your power and, you know, all the things that come off of that is that you have answers. You know, to me, an offensive system isn't just a collection of plays. It's not, well, that didn't work, so we're going to try this. It's, that didn't work, here's the adjustment to it because this is what they're doing. And that's you know, that's something that you, as coaches, you really have to put a lot of time into thinking about those answers and putting it into your thought process, because you got to be quick on the field, especially when you guys are running the tempo you're at. You have to be able to see it, communicate it, and make that adjustment like now.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's a tremendous point because one of the things I think every coordinator on both sides of the ball should be judged upon is what happens coming out of the half. You talk about adjustments and how you're fixing these things, you know. Sometimes people get involved in running certain schemes and things, and you got to know how to fix them if something's getting wrong. I think that, you know, having the knowledge and comfort of knowing how to fix things and adjust things is really critical. I agree with you 100%.
Coach, let's get into this third down a little bit. You led the country this year, 58.1% conversion rate, which is obviously really high. You know, let's talk about the philosophy behind that a little bit, you know, and your approach to third down first before maybe we get into some of the specifics.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think it begins with, you know, obviously everything begins with preparation. And there are things that when we build this offense, we built this basics of it, and we, within the pass game and the run game, there was two things that we wanted to make sure we did, that we were looking multiple and being simple for the players, but at the same time doing things that if practiced enough will out-execute the majority of any defensive scheme. So it would have to be a bastardized defensive scheme to not to beat this thing, or have an ultra athlete, if you follow where I'm going. But
yeah,
you have to have certain things that are built in that you know that you can execute. This is when I need this. All right. So, how do you find out those things? I think is your basic challenge. Now, when we talk about third down, we do spend a good amount of time practice wise on it. I mean, it's practice preparation is I don't know if it's overdone, but I do know that staying on the field has been a big part of our success offensively. So I think it's very, very, I think what we've done has been very good. But I think it's a lot of time. So first thing I run down is what we do on a weekly basis. So when we start out on Sunday, we practice them on Sunday, we bring them in. We're going to get an enclosed 15-minute period, you know, plus three in. So it's a short yardage concept period. And we're going to do our stuff, all of our stuff down there, not just our heavy stuff, but we want to do, you know, our bigger stuff and our heavy and our spread, a little bit of stuff down there on Sunday. So that's a 15-minute block, and it's very generic defenses, basically. I mean, most teams are going to line up on what they're going to line up against your heavy stuff and blah, blah, blah. So there's a 15-minute deal that we're going to try to get, you know, the plus 3-yard line into the goal line, you know, repped up a little bit, even if it's not in a high-intensity period. Now, we come back to practice again on Tuesday. We come out of our initial early part of practice, and we do a lot of stuff of one versus one, or good versus good, high-paced, short bursts, and high intensity, and great competition. So we'll come out of our Tuesday stretch and get right into a blitz period versus our defense. Now, in that period, it may not specifically be the stuff we're going to see that week, but this, for us, we treat as our third down and medium, where we're going to be throwing. We're most of the time we're throwing it in this blitz period, but throwing and protecting. We're gonna max it once. We're gonna sprint it once. We're gonna 6-man it. We're gonna 5-man it, and then we're gonna rotate it back and see which other looks we want. But sometimes it's not against the stuff we're going to see that week. But if there is any similarities, we run, you know, against each other, give them ideas of what we might want to see. But the whole thing about that is getting us into the mode of these are the plays regardless of what the defense is. And we need to be able to protect with six versus this or what we're seeing this week, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a good intensity period. And that, for me, as we're scheming that or scripting that, we're looking at, you know, our third and 4-7 stuff, that type of thing. So you're going to be quick pass and things like that. So that's Tuesday. And Tuesday, that's the main emphasis, or the only emphasis on third down that we'll do. Now, Wednesday, we go into our inside run period. We get blitz period is 8 plays, so it's 5 and 5 and then 3, so 2 sets of people. Inside run, 8 plays, we're going to run all of our third down and 1-3 stuff versus loaded box things. So that's going to be our tight end, our double tight stuff, our 21 personnel stuff. You know, we're going to run the play or 2 plays that we want to see, and by the time we come out of that Wednesday deal, our guys know what are our first one, definitely our first third down and short play, and maybe our first 3, but definitely our first one for sure, and then the other 2 might vary. Then we'll teach you what to play action off that. So that's an 8 play blast off. So that's a very physical period, and that's, we're going to narrow down again our short yardage deal. Now, the one answer to short yardage, which we try to stay, we use as only a last resort, is when you have the quarterback carrying it on the power play, because, you know, that's the one that has everybody had it up. And, you know, so we won't use that one at all. You know, we'll use that on Friday run too, because, you know, again, that whole play depends on what your second string quarterback, how good he is. So, and then the end of practice, oh, I'm sorry, we'll have the long yardage period. So we have a 8 play sequence that we do twice, and we go against our defense, good versus good again. We go 3rd and 15, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 14, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 13, 3rd and 10. Very, very adverse conditions for the offense. And it's an 8 play sequence that, heck, if we can get 50% on that deal, from week to week. We're ecstatic. Some weeks we do great, and some weeks not so great. But that's okay, because we're going to get it at high test. It's all filmed and all that good stuff. The other thing, before the season and in the spring, short yardage-wise, because remember, we're building a toughness mentality in general. But we do a lot of competition drills against our defense where we run second and six, and then whatever the third down is. We run another period we'll have against them would be second and four, and whatever the third down is. So sometimes it's second and long, and whatever the third down ends up. But these two down sequences that we compete against the defense end up, again, sharpening the sword of competition. But by the same time, it gives them a mentality that they know when we get to third and three, we're running this play. Mm-hmm. This is our play. And so we start to build that coming in the spring. So going through in the course of the week, that's preparation is deal number one. All right. The package itself are certain things that no matter what the defense is going to run, we should be able to execute. And if we don't, it's going to be because of a breakdown. So if you look at it, you know, we divide our categories from we're third and one to three, four to seven, eight to 11, 11 plus. You know, it's one of those deals that we probably just run one or two type of max protection down the field deals. But there's some other stuff we'll do with empty and third and 11 plus, you know, to manage the end of a game that we might be coming back in. But the other three categories are our game plan categories, 1 to 3, 4 to 7, 8 to 11. And we're going to end up within that sequence of each, what is the things that we think are the best for that week in that game plan. So, like I said, from 3rd and 1 to 3, our guys will never have a question as to what we're running going into that game. And until we find out we can't, you know, and if they're doing something to take it away, then there's going to be some play action off it that's going to work. Then we have our mid-range third downs where, you know, we're going to be working screens. Some weeks more wide receiver screens, some weeks more running back type screens. Those are usually pressure downs. We're going to do our intermediate three-step mentality and then some sprint out stuff if we have that. Anywhere within that short yardage, getting in close to the goal line, we do a lot of sprint out rub stuff. You know, we're going to do some, you know, getting in close inside the end zone, I'm not going to get too much into because it does change a few things. But, and then we get to third and eights and plus, and we're talking about pass protection. So we're talking about, you know, fundamental pass pro work, matchup deal, blocking line stunts, and then our down the field game. We do a lot of conversion routes off of coverages. We do attack the middle of the field effectively. Off of some different defensive contours. But, you know, our bread and butter on that is like as classic as your quarterback being able to reach it is that, you know, that option for the number one receiver to the wide side of the field where he's going to go or sit down. And, you know, again, we were very, very good at those positions. So, you know, our third down efficiency and third and long particularly was very, very good. And a lot of times when teams wanted to gamble and bring pressure, you know, we were great on the 50-50 ball. So, you know, it makes teams have to play off, which means that sit-down game becomes that much more effective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really kind of, you know, we alluded to earlier, is what are they giving you? You know, we know for sure that we're going to be getting pressure. And so we have to have lots of pressure answers, you know, as you get up to it, you know, third and six, third and seven even. But, you know, the rest of it is about, you know, being great in your fundamental protections and being able to defend what the defense is going to throw at you and still have coverage, because that's what really gets you is when the pressure's coming from not a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. You know, they're getting it with four, they're getting it with five, and, you know, that's just unacceptable, you know. And our guys, you know, again, I think we gave up six sacks the whole year this year, you know. Right. I mean, that's crazy. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's because it's great coaching. I mean, I'm talking about guys worked hard at pass protection, and, you know, we really, really took great pride in that, so... You know, that's kind of, you know, the preparation world, and that's, I guess it's like anything else. If you think it's important, you're gonna put the time in on it, you know. So that would be, I guess, in a nutshell, what our third down concepts are.
That's great, Coach. Thank you for that detailed answer. You guys are certainly doing a great job over there at LIU Post, having a lot of success. Obviously, on your side of the ball, you guys have done a great job for a long time now. But as we look at all the things you do, and you brought up some great things today in this conversation, what's the one thing you would point to? If I said, Coach, you got to name one, what's the one thing that gives you guys the winning edge?
I would think that the way these kids take our coaching and care about each other. I think that our success on the football field begins with them caring about each other, being committed to each other, taking the fundamental theories of life that we try to teach them and translate them to each other. I can't believe that we'd ever survive without that locker room being sound, and that comes from great leadership. And like we said earlier, as we were discussing, Keith, this is stuff we take very seriously, that we work on from, you know, every single day, all year long. So, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. But I would say that I'll give you this as a great example. I'll give you a few great examples. One, we've had more than six sets of brothers that have come here. So a parent has sent the older son and then sent the younger son, which I think is the greatest compliment we can get. That's one. One family sent three sons. So that aspect of them understand they're getting something great out of this. And the other is we just were all invited to a wedding of one of our former players, who's now the head coach at Nassau Community College. Actually, he's a fine young man. And we were at this wedding, and the staff actually was all there, and there must have been 22 or 23 guys from his class, not from his whole senior year, but from the whole time that he played, all at this wedding. And you look around and you say, wow, that is what we've been able to do. Is these guys are godfathers to their buddies' children. They're best men at each other's weddings. They're celebrating the times of people's lives, and they're there in tragedies as well. So if I would have to point one thing that makes this program great, it would be that. Players and how they care about each other.
That's the true measure of success in what we're doing in profession. Coach, I really, really appreciate all you shared with us today. It was a great conversation. I would love to have you back on again, because there's things we could talk about. But, you know, great job with what you guys are doing there over at LIU Post. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Do you think my email will be good? Or
email? Do you have a Twitter account as well?
I do, but I really don't post anything.
let's give him your email.
Yeah. brian.hughes@liu.edu.
Coach.
And if I ever do start posting something, I'll let you know.
All right, Coach. Well, it was absolutely great to talk to you today. Thank you for taking the time, and best of luck to you guys in 2018.
Thank you very much. I'd love to come back if you'd ever have me again. I really do appreciate what you do.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.